Hey everybody, Josh here. It is Saturday. Yeah, Saturday, September 2nd. Still under fire here in Burbank. And I am opening up this podcast. God, I suck at these pre-rolls. I really do. And I should start this over, but I'm not going to. This episode is brought to you by whatever sponsors are in between the ad breaks. I don't know. We don't do it like that. You know how it works by now. You're listening to March of the Pigs. For this episode, my guest is Tony Vinn, Asian man, comedian. Two of those are true and one is a lie. we talk about Ray's Barbecue. This is sort of a continuation of the last episode Tony Vinn was on. We talk about the inferno that is Burbank right now. We talk a little bit about movies, and we talk about just science, health, propaganda. We talk about a lot of different things. This is a fun episode. It's very funny. There's a lot of cool stuff going on inside of it. So, you know, I hope you like it. Check it out. Let's see. Upcoming dates. I am in, this will be out Thursday or the following Monday. So this won't be out at least until September 7th, maybe September 11th. So I will be nowhere. I'll be going to Philadelphia September 13th through the 20th. For my buddy's wedding, and then I'll be hitting some food stops along the way. So there's a lot of people who missed us when we were filming in Philadelphia because we were a brand new show at the time and nobody cared. And they're like, "Hey, if you're ever back in Philly, let me know." And I'm sure that's their voice. "If you're back in Philly, let me know. I won't come out and eat with y'all." So if we have some food sort of appearances or little meet and greets or whatever, we'll just tweet those out last minute, same day. Or Instagram them. So stay tuned to social media. In the meantime, enjoy this podcast with Tony Vinn. Step right up. March. Push. Crawl right up on your knees. Please. Greet. And now we're going. Isn't this cool?
This is nice. We are at the new Josh Denny March of the Pigs studio.
Yeah.
I'm kind of bummed though, man.
You miss the old days of like shitty little H1 recorders?
No, I missed the couch.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it can't all be perfect.
Josh had the most comfortable
couch. I still have it.
I know, but right now I'm not in it.
Yeah, so. But the problem is if we continue to record that way, you pass out. You fade in the middle of the podcast and you have nothing left to give.
I liked it when you snuggled with me.
Well, that's inaccurate entirely. So, it's been a while, man. What have you been up to?
Not much, man. Well, I'm trying to avoid the heat right now. It's hot as
the
balls.
The heat or the fire?
And the fire. Freaking felt like I was in Game of Thrones episode 6 last night.
Yeah, it's not good.
The valley... Verdugo off Latuna Road caught on fire yesterday, and it's probably like about 2 or 3 miles from my house, so it was kind of scary, but it smelled like barbecue, and so that was kind of good.
Yeah, I tweeted today, I don't know if you saw, I tweeted, this fire's getting pretty crazy, I don't know whether to evacuate or start hanging briskets over the balcony. because it's really it's it gets really low and slow. It's 115 degrees.
Oh God!
For like, if I leave it out there for like 75 hours, yeah, that should be the most tender brisket you've ever seen.
Give your boy Ray a call.
Yeah.
Speaking of, shout out to Ray who hooked us up last time we went into the restaurant.
Yeah. So this is like the Josh and Tony Talk Ray's Barbecue number two podcast, because when I on the last podcast that you were on, we talked about Ray's, but you had not been there yet. And then I finally took you there. That that day was like a million degrees too.
It was hot that day, and we came in, and he was almost sold out, but he hooked us up.
Yeah.
Nice guy.
Yeah, and refuses, like every time you and I go, or anytime Netta and I go, or I go with anybody else, he like refuses to let you pay.
Yeah.
He's just like, this is the last of my stuff. You know, we got to finish it off. Yeah, here you
and,
go.
And folks, it was some good shit too. Like,
yeah.
Like good good barbecue.
Yeah, man. If you're in Los Angeles, I would challenge you to find a better barbecue. I don't think it exists.
No. What's his Instagram so people can go look
Ray's
at
BBQ.
Yeah. Go look up Ray's BBQ, man.
On Instagram.
Shout out to my man Ray.
He's in Huntington Park, California, and it's the best. I think it's the best barbecue in all of Los Angeles for sure.
I was going to say the world.
Really?
The world.
Now, you used to live in barbecue, in the barbecue Mecca.
Two
of them. You were in Kansas City.
Kansas City.
And then Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas.
And isn't, Franklin's is in Austin?
That caught on fire like 2 weeks ago,
yeah, too. I saw that.
What the hell's going on, man?
It's the apocalypse. You didn't know that?
It's going down, man.
It's just like...
Not just Game of Thrones.
Just like the liberals said, Donald Trump gets in, the world ends.
It's happening.
He made the rains in Houston come.
Yes.
He made the fires in Burbank happen.
Yes, and tomorrow...
It's his fault.
Frogs falling from the sky.
And that'll be his fault, too.
It is.
They fell from his buildings. His stupid big monstrosities of buildings. It fell. It was terrible.
Oh, shit.
I can't log on to the internet anymore and read anything. Because it's like you're trying to find news about the fire and evacuations and everything else.
Yeah.
And then it's just somehow. Trump!
It goes back.
Trump hasn't even acknowledged the fires in Burbank yet. And it's just like, is he? Like, I feel like America is treating our president like some sort of shitty pageant queen. Like the last Miss America used to do this. And you remember how she waved at people? And you remember how she kissed babies? This new one is shit. It just highlights what a farce the presidency is as a position.
Yeah. It's one of those things for now.
He's like, I'd do everything I'd want to do, but there's that Congress. Oh, you mean the actual functioning arm of the government that's 10 times more corrupt than you ever could be? Oh, I'm surprised they're not. You mean they're not pushing through legislation that would get them voted out? No shit.
Dude, they'd love, my theory is they love having him because he's willing to.
He's taking all the bullets.
And he loves taking the bullets.
Yes.
He's willing to.
No one has been more willing to dive on the sword
in
terms of publicity than Donald Trump.
Oh, and they're like, oh, we get to push through the worst things, and people are just going to blame him versus us.
Yeah.
All right.
And if something good gets through, no one's going to give him credit.
No.
It's like the best situation if you work in Congress.
No. Yeah.
It's having a president that everyone hates is a bulletproof vest for anyone in Congress.
Oh,
right
yeah.
Now.
Oh, yeah.
What's no one's going to blame them for anything.
Mitch McConnell's jerking off to the next 4 years.
To this podcast.
To this
right
podcast
now.
Right now.
He's like, y'all had me with the brisket, and now y'all talking about my wheelhouse.
Does he talk like that? He talks like that?
I assume they all talk like that. Even the women from Massachusetts, I assume, still have that accent if they work in Congress.
Josh has two impersonations.
Yeah.
That and Tracy Morgan.
That's it.
Tracy Morgan.
I have outraged black man and Southern gentleman.
Southern gentleman.
I have Lane Smith from every movie he's ever been in, and I have Tracy Morgan. That's it. Lane Smith from Son-in-Law. What's his name? Crawl.
I love that dude.
That's a great movie.
That's his real name? How the hell do you know his real name?
Because I grew up loving the Mighty Ducks movies.
Oh, God.
And,
is he still alive?
And no, he died a couple years ago, I think. Man. I'm pretty sure he did. I'm pretty sure I remember him dying.
Dude, he was so good, man.
You're not even a has-been. You never was. Remember that line from Mighty Ducks?
Dude.
He was the best, Lane Smith.
Yeah.
His government name is Walter Lane Smith III. Oh man, he died a long time ago, 2005.
Really?
Yeah, in Northridge.
No wonder I haven't seen him.
Yeah, he lived to 69 and died in the Valley.
Damn.
And he has a couple kids, three kids or something. He had ALS, Lou Gehrig's. Wow, okay. I didn't know that.
Never saw it coming.
R.I.P. Lane Smith.
All right.
Also,
shout out to Lane Smith.
This is our moratorium, this is our in memoriam episode for people that have been dead for over 12 years.
Who else died in 1999?
Oh, man. R.I.P. Benjamin Franklin. Oh, I don't know if you guys know, but he's not around anymore.
What a dude, man. lower your kites today.
Yeah, kites at half spool. Isn't that what it's on a spool?
Is it still on a spool?
I mean, it should be. The Benjamin Franklin kites are on spools.
I never was a kite guy.
No, me neither, actually.
I wanted to be. They seem cool.
Did they?
They look cool, but not they look cool, not the guy on the other end of the kite.
Yeah. The guy never looks cool.
You better be discovering electricity, if not.
the guy on a kite always looks like, oh, that. You know what? He needs a break from all that kid fucking. That to me is what a kite says. Like, this guy's like, man, you ever just need to take a break from slamming 12-year-olds and just look up at the sky for a little bit? To me, I mean, that's just what I always thought.
It's the perfect, like, relaxation thing for kid fucking, man.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, so you need to follow that up with, so I've heard. You can't just give a testimonial like that and not say that it's not autobiographical.
Well, you never know.
Yeah. I imagine that's where every episode of To Catch a Predator would have went if he had finished eating the cookies before they tackled him.
He would have let them outside.
He would have been like, let's go outside and fly this kite.
That'd be interesting.
Because it keeps his hands up like this so that if somebody were to walk by, he'd be like, my hands are up here. Totally. Don't ignore what's happening down there. He's just working the spool.
All right.
So welcome back to March of the Pig.
Welcome back.
Listen, sometimes I feel like these episodes don't have enough comedy in them, and it's good to bring another comedian back in and
who?
And make him fun. Yeah. He's gonna he'll be here in 15 minutes.
All right.
Yeah, the fire's got him held up.
I can't wait for that comedian.
We need two of them actually to sit down.
Yeah.
But Ray's Barbecue,
Ray's Barbecue
to bring it all back full circle. Really good stuff.
Nice guy.
The nicest. It makes it impossible to unbiasedly judge his food because he is so nice.
Yeah,
like I don't know how much of it is, and this isn't to diminish how good it is. Period. But it's impossible for me to walk out and go, I wonder if it would taste as good if I hated the guy. But because he's so nice, he's such a great dude.
Right,
and he loves barbecue.
Like, but it's so good. I think if he was flying a kite right now, I'd still go eat his barbecue.
Yes, yeah. Even if the place had a kite as its sign, if they're like a neon kite, it said, you would
but
still
it doesn't. It doesn't. Let's clarify. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Nice guy. It's good story,
it's phenomenal.
Too.
Yeah, it's a great story. Great story. He's not classically trained. No. He didn't go to culinary school. He's not a chef.
Bought a used smoker and started selling it out of his backyard.
And this is like the new frontier of restaurateurs, because he's one of these guys, like, he doesn't even lie. He's like, I learned how to make barbecue on YouTube.
Yeah.
He's like, I went on YouTube. I watched like 100 hours of barbecue videos. I made my own rubs. I started doing this out of my backyard. People liked it. And I got enough money together and opened a place.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's the kind of place where it's like, it's a one-man show. It's like him and his wife and his son and his sister-in-law. And that's it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we went there at 8 and he's like, I closed down at 4 because I'm out of stuff. And then I got to come back at 9 and put the briskets in for the next day.
And he loves it. It isn't even about like selling as much as he can. He makes a set amount that he knows he can make good. And then he sells out. And if you get there after 3 p.m. on a Saturday, good luck. You know?
Yeah.
So go there early.
Yeah, there was like a family of four that showed up like at 4 o'clock after he was closed, and he was just like, I don't have anything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have anything. Which, you know, from my background working in retail and merchandising and stuff like that, that's like a perfectly profitable business model because you want to sell through.
Yeah.
Like, if you have 100% sell through on your product, that's better than having more inventory and 70% sell through. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, it could be the same, but essentially the fact that you're reconverting all your inventory into cash is a great business model.
Well, then it's fresh too.
Yeah.
Like even that night, I was like, oh, you got the night off. And he was like, I got to come back at 9 and start it again for tomorrow. So
yeah.
It's like, the dude puts in the work. So stop by.
It's the American dream, man.
It is.
And that's, you know, and it's not that expensive. I mean, I know some people, I've been in there and I've heard people balk at the prices, but it's like, dude, if you went to a Texas barbecue place, it'd be the same or more.
Yeah, if you're from Texas and you live out here, you're visiting, it's about the same equivalent because you buy it by the pound or half pound or whatever. So
right.
it looks like, you know, if you're not used to buying meat or barbecue like that, then it looks expensive, but it's really not. It's
right.
It's pretty just average.
So. Yeah, I mean, he's a beast, dude, and I love people like that. Like, you can't help but want to support them and go. But if it wasn't so far away.
Yeah,
I would go there. I mean, if it was in Burbank, I would go there all the time.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll open a second one.
Yeah, or maybe I'll open one and let him be my pit master.
There you go,
that
man.
Would be fun.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny, man. Barbecue restaurants, I feel like if you have a good one, they can be really profitable.
Yeah.
But if you have anything other than a good one, it's like any restaurant. You're going to go upside down.
Well, the weird thing, too, is like, there's always like,
but the thing that's kind of great about barbecue is like, it's not necessarily cooked to order.
Yeah.
But it's not fresh either. It's like sliced to order, but they literally are just, they're smoking them all day and then they just pull them out, slice them and serve them. And that's it.
And the best thing about barbecue too, is like, there's really no, I mean, there's a glass ceiling on how good it can get, but good barbecue, it could be some guy on the side of the street selling it.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, I feel like the same way with like even Vietnamese food. It's like, just because you go into, there's gourmet barbecue places.
Right.
And you go in there and it's not as good. Maybe it's too fancy, whatever.
Yeah.
I'd rather have the guy like selling it like in the parking lot of Big Lots that pulled up his, you know, smoking trailer and just been working at it. And that's all he knows how to do. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that's what you get from barbecue. I feel like that way with Vietnamese food too. It's like, I've been in a nice Vietnamese restaurants and I'm like, this isn't as good as the little shithole that, you know, in the strip mall that's made by the mom and pop dude.
Yeah. I feel that way about any Asian food, you know, and anytime I've had like what people call sort of like the high end Asian food, like it's like gourmet Japanese. And I'm like, it's tiny plates and terrible food. You know, because to me, part of what makes Chinese food good is coming out of a greasy fucking cardboard container.
Yeah.
Like, there's just something about it. Like, we'll order Chinese food sometimes along with sushi from Wakano in Burbank.
Uh-huh.
And they give you, like, Tupperware that are basically, like, high-quality reusable Tupperware for their food.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually will, like, wash them and keep them because mm-hmm. they're that high a quality. But the food isn't as good as when they bring it to you it's leaking everywhere. That's that flavor.
Yeah.
That's that good shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to have like toxic, like recycled paper, cartons.
Because, you know, it's the Chinese guy or Mexican guy nowadays that came over. They just know how to do that.
Yes.
That's their way of surviving. So they know something.
And it's just it's just loaded with MSG and it's flavorful and it's good, and you know that to me is like what's great about Chinese food. And to me, Vietnamese food, when it's its best, is when it's sort of like a softer handed version of that.
Yeah,
like it's, the flavors aren't as pungent. They're not. It's not as salty. Yeah. It's not as strong. There's a little bit more finesse.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of French cuisine technique in Vietnamese food, right?
Yeah.
So you're using
look at this guy.
You need
a food show, my friend.
Yeah, I need a new one. So there's a little bit more subtlety to Vietnamese food. But that can be fucked up very easily, like you're saying. Like there, so it is sort of the mom and pop places that I feel like when it comes to Asian food, go there. Like it's same thing with Mexican food. Like, you want a place that maybe doesn't have an A rating.
Oh yeah,
in their board of health thing.
Yeah.
It's like Jewish delis too. Like, we went into a New York Jewish deli to film some of these most recent episodes of Ginormous Food, and I talked to our culinary producer Katie, and they were just like, go in that walk-in, it's hot out, go in the walk-in. She's like, don't go in the walk-in.
it's hotter in the walk-in.
Well, she's like, if you go in the walk-in, you're gonna see some shit that you're not gonna want to be here.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I was like, is it unsanitary? And she goes, no, it's just not ideal. And it's just the way that, but that, you know, 100-year-old Jewish delis cure their pastrami and shit. It's like in a bucket in the walk-in.
Right.
And that's part of the flavor.
Yeah.
And there may or may not be like, you know.
Well, it might not check the box off for the health department.
Sure, but it is sort of one of those things of like, that's part of what makes it great.
Yeah.
Look, Native Americans didn't have refrigeration.
No.
You know, but you can find some like really classically made, you know, Native American food out on the reservation and stuff. That's
can you?
Yeah, some places.
I don't think I've seen a Native American
restaurant
for like in life.
You used to do the Midwest. You've done comedy and bars. I've been
through casinos, the Native American casinos and all that stuff.
But I'm sure, but like any of the sort of like indigenous cooking methodology and stuff, part of that is the flavor. It's the salmonella. It makes it. Look, Chipotle's using it in their food now, and that's probably why it's so good.
Yeah. There's a great show on Amazon Prime called A Bite of China.
Okay.
And it's all Chinese.
Did you tweet about this recently?
I did. It's subtitled. But it's like...
Let's take a break real quick and we'll come back to this. Okay.
Yeah, Bite of China on Amazon Prime. It's subtitled and... Each episode, it's probably too long, but...
Is it getting to the point with Amazon Prime where it's a must-have like Netflix? Because I'm starting to feel like it is.
I
feel like there's enough content on there now where you're like, I gotta have this too.
I just don't like... I don't like the interface.
Yeah.
It's not as smooth as Netflix, but, you know, I agree. But the show, man, it's like... It's very beautiful. It's like Planet Earth for Chinese food. But you see some shit and you're just like, oh my God. To eat that, you know, it's like why is there eating it with the mold on it?
I still can't get over the fact that octopus is like a highly, a beloved food, and I can't get into it at all.
I can't. And there's this
and
week,
they cook it like live, so it's like,
dude, there's
it's
this,
on the grill and it's like
did,
flopping
did you
around.
See, like on Facebook this week, there's a clip of in Japan they like put this. Octopus, they put this octopus in there, and I guess they cut off the head and everything, but the nerves are still alive. And so as soon as they put the soy sauce on it, like, it messes with the nerves, and it just starts, they call it dancing octopus dish. It literally just starts squirming in the bowl. Sometimes it pops out of the bowl, and it's a delicacy, and I'm just like, fuck that,
I'm out, dude. Gross.
Yeah, I can't.
It's not good.
I can't even do octopus. Like, I know, like, a lot of, like, Italians eat it
or tentacles. Even when I get calamari, I can't eat the tentacles.
No, I can't. I'll eat the rings.
Yep.
But, like, when you go...
I don't even care if those are... People are like, oh, those are pig assholes.
Pig asshole.
I'll take a pig asshole. I don't want any tentacles.
Well, like, when you go to a sushi restaurant and there's the little octopus chunk with the suctions that are just sitting there, like, in front of you.
Yeah.
I'm just like, how do people eat that? It looks so...
Yeah.
Like, it's disturbing to me.
It is. You know? And like, what happens if one of those things, if one of those suctions grabs any part of my tongue, I'm freaking the fuck out. I'm freaking out.
What if you take a shit and it's
nothing
stuck,
is
it's...
supposed to suck you back while you're eating it. Okay? Like, even if you're sucking dick, it doesn't suck you back.
Do you know that?
I mean, I'm assuming somebody would have freaked out by now over the years if it was like, oh, it bit me back. Like, it doesn't, you don't eat things that move in your mouth and fight back.
Ugh.
Like, that's something that just doesn't want to be eaten.
Just visually, I can't eat it because it has the suction cups.
Yeah,
I look at that and I'm like, why would I want to eat that? That looks like something that belongs in my kitchen.
Also, it just kind of looks like herpes. It looks like it has herpes.
It does.
I don't look at herpes videos every day, and I don't, you know, like I don't study them, but it doesn't look sanitary.
Ugh. Yeah.
And the people, nobody likes octopus. The people
you think
that
they're
eat
bullshitting?
It, the people that eat it are like, it's the most amazing thing. They love
it. They love it.
They can't just kind of like it.
It's like grill it with olive oil. It's like
some people can't just be gay. Like they got to really lean into it. Like, nope, it's the boots, it's the tank tops, the outfits, everything. And, you know, like you'll meet like a gay dude that's like just normal and fucks guys.
Yeah.
Like Eric Hahn.
Yeah.
Right? I got to have Eric on the podcast at some point. But you meet somebody like that and you're just like, okay, this is cool. Like, I'm cool. Yeah. But nobody feels that way about octopus.
They're flamboyant about octopus.
Yes, there are only flaming octopus lovers. Those are the only. That would be a great T-shirt. Flaming octopus lover.
Are there any flaming octopus lovers
out there?
That's
probably why they're. That's probably why their tentacles in pictures are always up like limp wrists. Like I don't know what sound an octopus makes, but it's just like hey. Hey, y'all want to suck on my suction cups? And you're just like, no, I don't.
I wish they could see your arms.
Just flailing. You guys know what it is. It's like, imagine a limp-wristed man climbing a mountain of suction cup dick. I don't know. But it's just, hey, y'all. I mean, go look at like a DreamWorks Shark Tale. I'm sure there was an octopus character, and I guarantee that's how he moved. Just hey. Just tentacles flailing about ridiculously. I would love to meet somebody who's like, octopus is fine. I'll eat it. No one does that. They're just like, oh my God, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's like crack.
It's a badge of honor or something. It's like, who
there's no
the
guy
shit?
Who sort of recreationally does crack. There's the guy who's, there's people that don't do crack. And there's people that are like, what your name is, boy? Get out of my cardboard house. Like that's, there's no middle ground with crack
fucking Tracy Morgan
or being gay or eating octopus. They're just these extremes. And I want to live in a world that's just not so damn extreme all the time.
Just go right down the middle.
Yeah.
Just hurt.
Can't enjoy a little bit of octopus.
Yeah, I have an octopus,
but
I prefer
push
a
it on
steak.
Me.
Right.
Yeah. Don't push it on me.
Yeah. If you had to eat octopus or suck a dick right now,
I'd suck two dicks right now. I said this the day we were filming. I said I would rather eat cow penises. Than this fucking little tiny octopus.
Eight octopus legs or eight dicks?
800 dicks. It's not even up for debate. Like if I were on Fear Factor and they were like, you can eat this one octopus or you can blow 7,000 men. I would be like, 7,000 men, go get them. I'm not eating one octopus. That's how gross it is to me. That's how not homophobic I am also, by the way. I'd be like, that I get. Yeah. Like, that makes sense to me. The texture doesn't look as off-putting.
Yeah.
But if somebody's dick had suction cups on it, I'd be like, you got to kick that guy out. It's going to be 6,999 because that's the same as an octopus.
Yeah.
Ugh. And I don't know about you, but for me, eating, like, texture is as important, if not more important, than flavor.
Yeah. It has to look appealing.
Yes.
It has to, yeah.
Well, it has to feel appealing in your mouth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Plus, octopus is just really rubbery.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't know.
I've heard it squeak in people's mouth while they eat it, and I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That's like when I was growing up.
Wait, dicks or octopus?
No, octopus. Okay. I've never been in the room while anybody's eating dick.
Squeak!
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like really gotten in there and eaten, chewed on one. But yeah,
it's I've eaten it before.
Like you hear people chew, and it's just like when you bite into something and you can hear how elastic it is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
no,
yeah. Yeah,
that's not food.
It's like a not good gummy bear.
It's like when I grew up and my mom dated a black dude from the South for like 2 or 3 years or something like that, and his family would eat like pig's feet and fucking chicken claws.
Yeah,
and they'd be like, "Oh, it's the best," and I'm like, "Is it?" Because most of it's mostly bone.
Yeah.
And hooves. And that's like with like, do you ever eat? That's the big difference between like, I like pho. I will never eat menudo. Menudo has like gelatinous cow hoof fat.
Well,
in it.
It's intestines, right?
Well, there's intestines.
Isn't that what the noodle is?
Menudo.
The
so it's belly.
Yeah.
It's not even belly. It's intestinal tract. Yeah. It's hoof. Gelatinous fat.
Yeah.
So it's like they cut the feet open and pull out the jello fat. It's like, what are you doing?
I know a lot of like
everything doesn't have to be food.
Well, Chinese people, they love like chicken feet too. And
y'all
swear
with them chicken
by
feet. Yes.
And I, first of all, that, okay, I'll eat octopus before I eat one of those things.
Chicken
it's,
foot?
It's just
I actually
foot.
Would rather eat the chicken foot.
Really?
Yeah, because I feel like I could throw away the part that's gross. All of the octopus is gross.
With like, it's just the foot.
It's just a claw.
Yeah,
like
the
this.
Claw.
Yeah, it's a claw. Yeah. Yeah, I can eat that like a wing. Like I can get to the meat and throw the claw part away.
But it's all bone, so you're basically eating the little skin cartilage.
Yeah, you're eating cartilage.
Yeah.
I can't even do that with chicken wings.
Ugh,
like you ever eat wings with a friend and he's just ripping gristle?
Yes, and it's clean.
It's clean.
Clean.
Now, here's a real question. Was that friend a black person?
No.
Really?
But he was from Alabama.
Okay, so it's kind of the same thing. I remember when I ate the first time I ate wings, I ate wings. This is a funny story. There was a fighter in the UFC, or not in the UFC. He was in Strike Force, and he went on a tear for a while. His name was Brett the Grim Rogers, and he's had a tough life since then. He's had some domestic things happen. He's had a real vicious divorce, everything. I used to work with Brett Rogers in Austin, Minnesota, at a video store when I was in high school. He was in college. I was in high school. He was like 21, and I was 19 or whatever. And we used to hang out and just goof around and watch movies and stuff. Like, this dude didn't have a violent or aggressive bone in his body when I knew him. So I was shocked when I found out he was a UFC fighter. But the first time he ever sort of like green miled me while we were at, like, impressed me with some fucking hardcore shit was we were at a Buffalo Wild. Like, me and my buddies would always go to Buffalo Wild Wings on Tuesdays in Rochester, Minnesota. They had like 30-cent wings back then.
Yeah.
And we would get like 50 wings. And we would pound these things, but there would always be the ends and everything else. And we took Brett one time, and he's like, "Y'all wasting it." Oh, and he literally, man. And I say green mile because he had like this very soft but bassy voice. And he was like, "Y'all gonna waste all that meat?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "You'd leave in half of the meat on the bones."
He
and
did I was not like, talk
"Yes,
like
he
that.
Did. He was just super
oh,
bassy.
That's how, so awesome.
Maybe he doesn't, but that's how I remember it." And he had this big laugh, like this big, like Santa Claus laugh, dude. And then I was like, "Well, how are we supposed to eat it?" And he took a flat, okay, which they have the most gristle, and put it in his mouth and pulled it out clean, like chopsticks.
Jesus.
And then took like a wing, leg. What are the round ones?
The
rounds and flats,
the
right?
Drumstick?
The drumstick.
Yeah.
Takes a drumstick that's got like, I don't know, 6 ounces of gristle on the end.
Yeah.
Puts it in his mouth, pulls it out like a fucking toothpick.
Really? Even
and
the,
I'm just
the crunchy
like,
cartilage
and he's just
part.
Eating it like Ritz crack. And I go, "What the fuck? How? How are you just..." It's like he was drinking the gristle. Like it wasn't like his mouth didn't even need to chew this substance to break it down.
Yeah.
And I was like, I couldn't... My teeth would shatter if I tried to do that.
Oh, like, man.
Y'all wasting it. And then he started smashing people's heads in for a living.
There
and
you go.
I like to think he would think back to us throwing out all that meat on the bone.
That would
and
trigger
that would
him.
Enrage him. And that's what he carried into fights with him.
In the second round, whenever he's losing, he's
That was his Rocky moment.
Wasting God's creatures.
Yeah, just wasting gristle, all that good gristle. Oh, and I was like, man. Isn't it? He was like, "Oh, you wasting the gristle. That's the best shit.
Dude, you need to bring him on the show, man."
I couldn't even begin to find him if I looked for him.
I want to find
the last news article or whatever I read about him was like he was like fucking with people in a Minneapolis bathroom and
really
and
like he's not even
no it's like and he was like homeless or something and it's a crazy story and I shouldn't really speak about it but you know it's crazy to hear about that and you talk to people like I briefly talked to Joe Rogan about him in what I did that show with him at the Comedy Store a couple.
Sorry. Sorry, hold on. I was pulling up.
You're that guy?
I'm pulling up the squid thing.
Nope.
For you.
The magic squid? I don't want. Oh, nope. The dancing squid? No. No. I don't even. Oh, oh, that's disgusting. That is disgusting.
How much would it take? What is the amount of money?
It would take $1 million.
To even
sit at a
eat
table
that.
With that dish.
Eat that.
It'd have to be a million. And it's headless?
They cut off the head, so it's dead.
But when they pour soy sauce in it, it
triggers the nerves.
First of all, what does that tell us about soy
the
sauce?
Sodium.
That there's enough, that it can reincarnate your central nervous system? Why aren't we using this instead of stem cells? I'm serious. If soy sauce can reactivate dead nervous tissue in an octopus, maybe we should look at it on the surgery table in the operating room. That's absurd.
That'd be great to have the operator or the doctor pull.
Send me the link for that, and I'll put it in the show notes so people can actually click it and check it out.
Like, nurse, bring in the Kikkelman. And
we need a low-sodium soy. His legs are starting to give out. What if we
Christopher Reeve can walk again?
And he's dead. He's all the way dead. Yeah.
But he can still walk.
Yeah, but he can still walk. Maybe that's how zombies happen.
There you go.
I always knew it was the Chinese people's fault. The zombies. Walking Dead, season 12, they trace it back to soy sauce. Yeah, it's a Hosen sauce. It gets into the medulla oblongata and carries them forward. No, but I was talking to Joe Rogan about Brett Rogers, and he's like, man, what a terrible.
Oh, he remembered him?
Yeah, well, he knows him from the fight world.
Okay.
So he was like, man, what a.
So he made it to a certain point.
Oh, yeah, he fought Fedor for the title, and Fedor made light work of him.
Okay.
But, I can't remember if he fought Kimbo Slice and beat Kimbo. I think he knocked Kimbo Slice out.
Okay.
I can't remember, but he knocked out some pretty major guys. I mean, he's a big dude. Mm. He was like 6'4", and he was probably 275 when I met him. I mean, he was a full blown heavyweight.
Eat your chicken,
and,
kids.
Yeah, no kidding. If that gristle is what gives you that punching power, damn, man, go get it.
I need to look him up, man.
But I remember I talked with Rogan about him, and I just mentioned his name. As I go, I don't even know how it came up, but I was like, oh, you know, he's like, man, that dude had a real bad fall, like in terms of like in his career and then in his personal life and everything else. And I think we were just talking about how women can like completely fucking derail a guy who's got a lot going for him. And I think that's how it happened. He had this horrible marriage and divorce. And, and I remember like other friends of mine that stayed in better touch with him after we were working at Hollywood. They were just like, dude, she was a man eater, evil bitch. He was like he was like Green Mile. He was gentle. He was like a gentle giant. Yeah. And then, you know, you get with the wrong person that just fucks with you and drives you crazy. And you know, and that's kind of what happened to the dude. I mean, from what I know.
Yeah.
And it's very sad because he was a genuinely good dude. Mm-hmm. And it's. In a way, I'm kind of glad that I know somebody that I can say that about, because I am optimistic that I can carry that forward in life and be like, maybe some of these other people that were quick to look at and judge and go, that guy's fucking crazy, that guy's a piece of shit. Like, maybe they're not.
Right.
Maybe they're all just the same good dude that I know he was and probably still is. And just like, you know, you get into those situations and you self-medicate, whether that be through violence, whether that be through drugs.
Yeah.
Whether that be, I mean. Like
how, you're just caught in a spiral that you can't get
and you,
out
and
of,
you
man.
Just, and who knows, like the brain is a powerful thing.
Free,
man.
OJ, that's why.
Look, that is a perfect example, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think, what are there, 100 documentary hours about OJ? Like, the fucking guy did it.
Yeah.
There's no. It, or at least was heavily involved in the whole shebang.
He knows something.
He knows who did it.
He did it. He did it.
Okay, let's.
He did it.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
But that's my point is like, you know, people will look at a guy like that and just go, well, why would you throw it all away just to murder your wife and her boyfriend? And it's just like.
Because my wife was with the boyfriend.
Yeah, like, dude. People do not understand.
Chris Rock's bit.
Yeah.
I understand. I don't say he should have did it.
Yeah.
But I understand.
I get it. Yeah, yeah. But I understand. Yeah. And that's so true of just like, this is the thing that kind of drives me nuts about the way people react to human behavior is like, you know, it wasn't that long ago we were fucking savage barbarians, right?
Yeah.
And there are still many parts of the world that are mostly savage barbarian.
Well,
and so when people are just like, oh, that man didn't say thank you. And it's just like, yeah. 100 years ago, that guy would have ripped your fucking throat out and had sex with your corpse,
man.
Because he wanted to.
Right.
Like, so it is one of those things like, yes, I understand we're in a society and we have to coexist and we have to be nice. But we're learning how to do that all the time.
I mean,
to expect it of people is disrespectful for where we came from.
I mean, the world, like. Nazi Germany was 60 years ago?
Yeah.
That's not a long time.
Yeah, I mean, not 60. It was
70, 80
years ago.
That's not a long time in
the
whole
scheme
of the picture.
Of things, yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't have cars.
Yeah.
A little over 100 years ago.
Like, segregation was only like 50 years ago.
Segregation was still in the SEC of college football in like 1977.
Yeah.
So, like, you're talking about mass segregation. There were still all white schools in the SEC in the
70s. Yeah.
So we're not even 50 years
out
of segregation.
So the expectation for us to be perfect.
Overnight. Yeah.
It's an impossible ask.
And,
you know?
And we have come further than we should have because of technology.
Yeah.
So, you know, this whole, we're having this whole kind of, we kind of segued into this greater conversation, but it's sort of like, that's why I get angry. I don't get angry when people bitch about political incorrectness or whatever, because I disagree. I get angry at the expectation that we should already be there,
right,
when we are light years, we are evolving at a rapid light year pace.
Yeah.
And people are coexisting. Like, I watched, of all the movies that I watched this year that I thought like really summed up the racial divide and everything, I watched the new Barbershop movie the other night, and they get into the, yeah, you're laughing at me. And so
there's
is
a
Netta.
New one.
There's a new, it's the final cut or whatever. I don't know what it is, but it's the next chair. It's some barber reference, but they get into a lot of like political debate, yeah, in the Barbershop. And there's an Indian guy in there. And this is often where I find myself on in the conversation of class and race inequality in America, because so many of my friends, like Netta's family are immigrants, your family were immigrants, come from the perspective of like, you started here. You've been like, there are people in this country that might be of a certain ethnicity, but they've been in the United States for centuries, mm-hmm, and generations. And there are a lot of friends of mine who are first generation born here with immigrant parents, and their parents somehow found a way to learn the language, not only survive, but prosper, mm-hmm, and become extremely wealthy in one generation. So it's sort of like, if it can be done, that means that the opportunity is there. And so in the movie, there was an Indian guy who was explaining that story. It was like, my family came here. They didn't know the language. They couldn't get bank accounts because they didn't have driver's licenses, mm-hmm, and American names. And they found a way to do it. And then they were like, yeah, but you know, black people are still getting shot by the police every day, and there's still this inequality. And then they ended the debate on, he said, regardless of how you feel about where we're at, it's still the best time to be a minority in this country, in the history of this country. He was like, 2016 is the best time to be a person of color ever in America. And every day will exponentially get better,
yeah,
as we go forward. And I felt like that was the best end to that debate, of just saying like, understand that today is the best it's ever been, and tomorrow will be even better.
Right.
By one or two people, totally, by one or two movements. So it's sort of like, I don't get righteous about those things, not because I don't think they matter, but because I think we're moving along at a better pace,
yeah,
than we probably could have.
It's going to take time.
Yeah.
It'll continue to take time. There's just shitty people out there. It's when you feel entitled that you deserve something, that's when it gets muddy, because it's like,
yeah, you can pull this closer if
it's
you
like,
want.
I should have it now.
Right.
You know, well.
Well, and it is sort of, it is social consciousness meets the instant gratification that our technology has brought. Yeah. So, you know, you look at how people date now. It's like, swipe. Yeah. Where's my soulmate?
Exactly.
And it's just like, are you out of your fucking mind? Like, have you ever met somebody with an arranged marriage?
Yeah.
And you're sitting here going, well, she's a little slightly fat for me.
Yeah.
And you just, it's just so far removed from where some of the other parts of the world are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, dating's so terrible now just because of that. Everything's just, people have.
It was like, we went out and I didn't feel fireworks immediately. And it's just so what?
Or they look.
Maybe that guy had a shitty day at work, even though you planned your date 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And you're going to judge him forever based on 5 minutes because your time is so valuable.
Well, people will look for the problem too, to get out of it too, you know, versus, all right, I'm going to give this person few more dates,
right?
You know, so it's tough, man. It's every
well, you know, and when it's almost like female comics used to ask me like, you've been with the same girl for 5 years, how did you do it? They stop asking me because of the answer. The answer is, we spent a year getting to know each other before we ever even tried to date.
Right.
So we knew everything about the other person when we started dating.
Yeah.
And we were locked in. We were okay with it. But nobody wants to hear that story because nobody wants to put in that work.
No, it is work.
Nobody wants to dedicate a year to getting to know somebody before getting the gratification of saying, I'm going to date this person now.
Right.
So, you know, it's one of those things where... And the value of that to me was that it took all the other things off the table. So it was like a clean getting to know somebody. It wasn't like getting to know somebody with an end goal in mind.
No, you guys were friends first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's It is. I think the social outrage about the way everything is in the world right now is more about the demand for immediate results in everything.
But it's also such bullshit because as soon as the next thing comes, it just passes.
Yeah.
And they were so outraged against is...
doesn't exist.
It's like, what?
It's no, like it's gone we
moved
overnight.
On. Yeah. We moved on, you know?
Oh, that was so 15 minutes ago.
It is. But I don't know, man. Yeah. Like even this week with the floods in Houston and everything, like people were kind of talking about, oh, donate to, you know, I even posted like donate to the Red Cross and all that stuff. And then people be getting on there and be like, don't donate to the Red Cross, man, or whatever, you know?
Yeah, the Red Cross is bad,
like,
right?
Does everything just piss you off? You know, yeah. It's like, is there just something wrong with everything? Guess what? That's the fucking world, you know? It's yeah. like... It's like, hey, do you want to help or not? Just shut the fuck up. But it's like, oh, I got to complain about this. I got to complain about that. Meanwhile, they're not doing anything. Yeah. They're not doing anything. So fuck those people, man.
Did we, I can't remember. How many commercial breaks did we take so far?
Took one.
Just one?
Yeah.
All right. Let's take another one because I want to come back. Because you're leading me right into something I want to talk about.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Which is this world we live in now of this shock and awe way that information is being communicated. It's almost like this, we're back to fire and brimstone Catholicism with the way that people talk about things. And I'm talking about the vegan documentary, What the Health.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, so I want to
come
back.
You can tell me about it.
And Netta can jump in on this one too if she wants because it's funny and she watched it with me and we were both like, what the fuck is this? So we'll take a break and we'll come back. So people have, we watched this live, this What the Health documentary, and people have...
Is it on Netflix?
It's on Netflix. Okay. So we watched it, and it's the word I was looking for before the break was this sensationalism. Mm-hmm. So you hear people talk about like fake news, right?
Yeah.
And everyone sort of that considers themselves intelligent laughs at the concept of fake news. But you see this sensationalism in the way that stuff is communicated. And that's what waters the real good journalism down. And so if you watch this documentary, What the Health, it's a documentary made by, I think his name is Kip Anderson. And then there's another guy with a weird K name like Gel or something like that. But they're guys that did the documentary Cowspiracy, which I don't know if you saw that one.
But I wouldn't watch it just because of the name.
But that documentary talks about sort of the environmental impact of factory farming livestock.
Right.
Which is undebatable,
yep.
right?
Yep.
But part of the problem is we live in a world now with too many fucking people, and the food demands are going to take their toll on Earth. Right. And their idea is, well, if everybody was vegan, that diet wouldn't cause an ecological disaster.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Sure.
If we were growing more plants and fruits and everything, the world would be a healthier place.
And if we'd walk everywhere, we wouldn't be using oil.
Sure. But right. So there's the difference between idealism and practicality.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we should just get rid of cars. By the way, cars kill more people than guns.
Yeah.
So why aren't we having an automobile prohibition movement
right
now because of the environmental impact of cars, because it's not practical.
Right.
Right. And so to put a halt to the meat eating industry, it's just not practical. And they go so far as to highlight like really, you know, like really common things that meat eaters say to talk about like why they're not going to go vegan. They're like, oh, why do I have sharp teeth in my mouth if I'm not supposed to eat meat? And, you know, then they go like, well, you know, lateral incisors aren't the same as canines. Like canine teeth are like fangs and they can tear through raw flesh and, you know, and human being teeth, like even though they have sharp teeth, they're not designed to hunt and kill animals. And that all makes sense. Mm-hmm. But then they also make claims in the documentary, like eating one egg is the equivalent of smoking 5 cigarettes.
What?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, so it's like, and it's like, find me a fucking doctor that would bring in and go, what do you have for breakfast? 2 eggs every day? Well, you might as well smoke a pack.
Did they justify it somehow?
No.
Is it the cholesterol?
It was just like, it just cited one study, right? And it's sort of like,
so it's all propaganda.
It is all vegan propaganda. Yeah. It's completely sensationalized vegan propaganda. There's a period in that movie where the guy goes, there's a doctor. And by the way, all of the doctors in this movie are doctors that have published books on vegan diets and the base of the benefits of such a diet. And of course they cherry pick research that shows them. But the problem with researching like that is like, it's like religious studies.
Yeah.
It's like saying, it's like saying being gay is a choice. And then like you would sit somebody in a chair and hold a gun to their head and go, suck that dick or die. And they go, well, I guess I'll suck the dick. And they go, it is a choice. It's like, well, that's a fucked up control group.
Right.
Like the choice is turn gay or die.
Right.
I'm going to turn gay. And they go, well, you turn gay, so it is a choice. Like that's the kind of studies that the vegans do.
What? That was a fake gun? Damn it.
Yes. Now I'm blowing everybody.
Damn it.
So a lot of dick talk on this podcast. Welcome to dick talk, everybody. But my point is like, so if you say 100% of people under duress turn gay, you wouldn't just, if you went out with that as a study, people would go, you're fucking crazy.
Right.
But if you dig on these vegan studies where they go, sugar is better for you than meat, it's like, it's the same kind of chaotic logic of such a tight control group with no placebo group, no control group, no study.
Yeah, it's
a biased study.
To make it fit their argument.
Nobody does research without first having a hypothesis.
Yeah.
And every piece of research ever done has set out to prove someone's hypothesis.
Yeah.
So no one collects the data that argues with their beliefs.
Right.
Has anyone ever come out and said, we ran this study, turns out we were completely fucking wrong, but we cured cancer.
Right.
That's why we don't cure anything, because nobody is letting the science dictate where the research goes. They want to change what they're doing to prove their hypothesis.
Right.
That's how you make money as a scientist.
Yeah. And you bury the other shit.
You bury the other shit that disagree, no matter how accurate or life-changing it could be. So they're sitting there talking about like, well, you know, the American Diabetes Association, American Health Association, they're all sponsored by Big Meat. But the Big Meat industry. And it's like, yeah, but they're also funded by Kraft and Nabisco and Nestle, because you told these companies that they need to pay for this shit as part of being socially responsible.
Yeah.
So you can't force the food industry to test itself and then say that its fucking results are biased because it's paid for by the food industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, you know, the ADA didn't go, listen, we're just going to have this and it doesn't cost anything.
Right.
The ADA was like, listen, if you want to be responsible and you're Tyson Chicken, you need to fucking pay for this stuff.
Yeah.
This research.
Yeah.
And they did it. Like they were sort of shaken down, forced to participate. And then everyone wants to say, well, their research favors their business. And why shouldn't it? Your research favors your business.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's research favors their opinions. Yeah. No, there are no objective researchers in the world who are just going like, let me just see what the studies are.
Right.
The only one I heard was on this recent episode of Joe Rogan's podcast. And he had this dude on who was talking about the benefits of a ketogenic diet. And he started researching ketogenics as a way of fixing seizures in children. And then he started to find out all these other things through the process of his research. And once it sort of started to reveal itself, Dom DiAgostino, once it started to reveal himself, he kind of shifted the focus of his research. So you hear this guy say like, I was studying for one purpose. And then I started finding out so much about so many other side benefits of this, that now this is the main area of my study and research. And he's creating a supplement company to try to like use this information to make people healthier.
Yeah. Well, that's because good research.
Because the science made him a believer in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know that vegan people aren't the same, but he didn't go on Joe's podcast and go, you know, one net carbohydrate a day will take 10 years off your life. Like, you know what I mean? Which is sensationalized journalism, which fucking ruins scientific findings.
Have you ever had a conversation with a vegan though?
Yeah, I mean,
they'll tell you.
You can't.
They don't even need research to tell you.
They're like Antifa. There's no logic to it whatsoever. It's just like anyone in a position of power is a fascist. And it's like, are you out of your fucking mind?
Yeah.
Like that's an insane logic. That's the same kind of thinking, by the way, that creates racism and classism and separatist movements. It's like the idea that everything is one way forever, no matter the circumstances.
Right.
Like, it's that hands up in the air. I have no social impact on these things. Like, and no ability to influence and change the things around me, so I'm going to fight them and resist them. Man. That's why the whole resist movement is absurd to me, because resisting something means not involving yourself in changing it, right?
Yeah.
So that's totally. It's lazy activism.
It is.
It's ridiculous.
They think they're in The Handmaid's Tale or whatever.
I haven't seen that yet. Is that
you good? Haven't?
Yeah, you told me about it on the last podcast. It's good. You said I got to check it out.
It's good. Although I just heard an interview... I just listened to an interview with the lady who wrote the book back in 1980 something.
Oh wow, okay.
She was kind of a bitch.
Oh really? Like,
she was kind of a bitch. She sounded very smart.
You're like, I can't enjoy the show anymore because she's kind of a bitch.
She sounded very smart, but it's like the host was just asking her questions. She'd give just one word answers.
Oh man, that's never good.
He's like, "What do you think about this?" She's like, "It's weird." And he'd be like, "What do you mean by weird?" She goes, "What do you think weird means?" It's like, it's just one of those.
She's very high on her own thought process.
But who knows? I mean, it's a great. I'm sure it's a great book. It's a great show. So
this documentary, by the way, watching it is like it's in sort of enraging like that, because they'll make these claims like one egg is the equivalent of five cigarettes, or it's better to eat a bag of Sour Patch Kids than it is to have a steak. And
are you serious?
Oh, I'm dead serious. Like, there's so many implications, so many accusations.
Did they interview doctors about that kind of shit? Like, oh, well, guess what? Your cholesterol.
Yeah.
All that shit will go through the roof.
Yeah. And everybody was saying like, well, these people are dying from these Atkins diets because they're eating all this meat and their heart is clogging and the cholesterol is there. Yeah. But the funny thing is like, if you turn around, there's just as much research and as much proof that the sugar lobby created the whole saturated fat mythology and the whole cholesterol mythology that led people away from meat diets and into high carbohydrate diets.
Right.
So like, there's, you can go back not that it's like a great research tool, but Adam Ruins Everything did an episode on weight loss food, and they highlight a lot about how the sugar lobby in the 40s and 50s basically waged war on the meat and dairy industry and said, you know, you can't be eating this stuff. Sugar's good for you. It gives you energy. It helps you think, you know, and they didn't talk about any of the negative side effects. And you're starting to see a lot of research that says actually saturated fat is important for brain development. And, you know, those type of things.
Didn't you tell me that's how, like, cereal came about, too, whatever, like, as a breakfast thing? Because, like, the sugar...
Yeah, the sugar... Well, it was their way of giving children candy for breakfast. Yeah. So it was sort
versus
of like...
Versus eating, like, eggs and meat. And
yeah,
everything.
And they were just like, you know, that cholesterol, that'll kill you. You know, you need sugar to give you energy in the morning and carbohydrates and... You know, there's all kinds of... I mean, why would sugary cereal be marketed to children as cartoon characters?
It's drugs.
Pushing drugs. So, and I'll tell you this, listen, I've quit eating meat. Netta and I have quit eating meat for a week at a time.
Yeah.
Never had any side effect. I stopped eating sugar and carbohydrates, and on the eighth fucking day, I was having DTs like I was coming off heroin. I'm not shitting. I was laying on that couch like whimpering and shaking because I felt like my skin was crawling. And I couldn't, it was like an itch I couldn't scratch.
Wow.
And I was like this. Wow. I was literally on the couch shaking like this. Like, I can't get the
fucking
jitters.
You look like a gay octopus right now.
Yes. I can't, I couldn't stop jittering. I couldn't fall asleep. It was fucking vicious. And that tells you, like, to me, that's the only research I need is my own research to know that my body was so addicted to sugar that when I cut it out entirely for 8 days to go into ketosis to lose weight, I had a fucking drug withdrawal.
Yeah.
And my mother's gone through actual drug withdrawal, and she's going to school as a drug counseling and a therapist. And she's like, what you described is exactly what people coming off of cocaine and heroin describe the feeling. And so, I was just like, holy shit.
So once you got past that, how many days did that last? Like a couple of days?
It was probably about 36 hours. It was about
That's a long time.
It was a night and then pretty much a day.
And you were able to get past it.
Yeah, I got to 16 days
without sugar.
Without any sugar. And when I say sugar, like no bread, no starch,
really?
not a gram of sugar.
What about like in fruits and stuff, natural sugar?
I wasn't eating fruit. You don't eat fruit when you're trying to get into ketosis.
Really?
Nothing.
Wow.
It's meat. Primarily, it's saturated fat. So like the best foods to eat on that are like nuts, carbohydrates, clean sources of saturated fats. Mm-hmm. You know, and the only reason that it's hard to eat meat to get your fat is because of the sodium in how we preserve meat, okay, and season meat to serve it and everything else. So like beef jerky, it's all salt.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Bacon cured, it's all salt. Lunch meat, it's all salt. So you're taking on a shitload of salt in a ketogenic diet. And there are some theories out there that salt is good for a ketogenic diet, but you also have to stay severely hydrated. So, you know, the hardest thing for me was eating a lot of meat and then being able to balance the sodium levels, okay, with hydration. So you sort of are better off eating like cruciferous vegetables that have zero net carbs.
Okay.
So like green beans, anything that grows above the ground, okay, that's not a rooted vegetable. So like obviously tomato being a fruit has a lot of sugar, but you could do tomato. You could do lettuce, kale, Brussels sprouts, you know, broccoli, cauliflower, anything cruciferous like that.
Damn.
But like what you can't do is like potato, yams, beets, anything that's really has a high concentration of starch and sugar.
Are you gonna go back to that diet?
Carrots are not great. I do it periodically. Like this is my feeling, man. I feel like I'm at the age, and I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm at the age where my body tells me. Like I had Arby's 2 times in 3 days the other day, and I didn't shit for a day. My body was like, "You need a juice and some fucking vegetables."
Yeah.
And still same thing today. Like I had that pastrami for lunch. We just went to the Hat.
Oh my God.
Pastrami and cheese fries. Like if I don't eat something balanced out, I'm not going to shit again today.
Yeah.
And I'm going to feel terrible. So I'm at the age where my body is like, hey, this is how you're going to feel until you change what you're eating.
Right.
So, and then in terms of like long-term health benefits, none of the diet matters if I'm not exercising. So the last time we did keto, we didn't exercise.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't lose shit. Now we, I lost a little bit of weight, but nowhere near what I did the first time when I was exercising every day.
But
when I exercised every day and was doing keto, I lost 16 pounds in 15 days.
Damn. But is your energy, do you still have the energy to work out or is it just completely shifted?
It's tough. It depends. I think the keto flu, they call it, I think that is all relative to what your sugar intake is like before you cut it out. Because what we're talking about is you're quitting sugar and carbohydrates cold turkey. And so your body goes into this shock system and it thinks you're not getting enough. You're not getting any food. We're starving. We're weak. Mm-hmm. And so the difficulty I think that people have, and this is a combination of my own experience and some of the research I've heard people talk about on other podcasts, is managing how your body deals with depleted glycogen storage. So like glycogen is basically your blood sugar storage level. And insulin is produced in response to how your glycogen levels fluctuate. Mm-hmm. So if you're somebody whose glycogen levels fluctuate and you're creating a tremendous amount of insulin in response to those highs and lows of blood sugar stores, and then you zero out, I think you're going to have a harder time than somebody who doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. And more so than what you're eating, I think our eating habits, Netta's and mine, make that harder on us because we are like these people that eat once or twice a day. If you're somebody who's eating 10 times a day, even if you're eating like fucking Sour Patch Kids and garbage, I still think your ability to manage that fluctuation of glycogen is better than somebody who's peaking their insulin response with only eating a couple times a day. Mm-hmm. So when we go to that, we crash fucking hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's now you're killing the sugar response and you're depleting the glycogen and the food is only coming once or twice a day. So the hardest thing for us has been like eating regularly when we come off the sugar. And then the other thing that a lot of people do, which we were guilty of as well, is you think because you're not eating sugars and carbohydrates that you don't have to count your calories. So you're eating 5,000 calories of meat and vegetables.
Right.
Because that's what you need to be full, and now you're still overdoing your workload, and you're still going to gain weight because you're it's in and out.
Jeez, man, sounds tough.
Yeah, it is. It's easier to just be. It's just easier to be fat. I've made my decision. It's just easier to be fair. But, you know, you just kind of, you got to manage it as best as you can. Yeah. That's why I try not to be preachy. And, you know, people think, like, because I host a food show that I have some sort of social responsibility to tell people about diet. Look, read the research, listen to all the podcasts, study everything everybody tells you, and then try them all.
Yeah.
And do whatever feels good to you.
It's all out there.
That, yes, all the information is out there. I'm not to tell you what's right or wrong. The one piece of material that I read that makes sense to me is a book called Eat Right for Your Blood Type that my old boss recommended to me. Mm-hmm. And this doctor's theory is that...
Could you had AIDS?
Yes. This doctor's theory, I don't even want to acknowledge it. I want to skip over it. Like, people go, is that real? Does he really? And then Josh Denny AIDS will rise to the top of the Google thing. I'd be the fattest person in the history of AIDS to have AIDS. But this
Philadelphia, you are from Philly.
That is true.
Yeah.
But the doctor's theory was that for centuries, different cultures have optimized digestion of specific foods into energy. So if you eat traditional cuisine mm-hmm. to your genealogy, you will convert that into energy better, and that will be where you're most optimized for health. So he's basically saying, if you're Asian, eat a traditionally Asian diet, and you will be more fit.
Yeah.
Because you are eating foods that thousands of years of genetics have grown and developed to process into energy.
Yeah.
So he's saying, if you are from England or the UK or Europe, eat foods that are traditionally native to those areas. Like for me, it would be like rabbit and deer, not shit that's just at every restaurant in Los Angeles.
He's saying that if you just start eating anything, shocks your system genetically.
Well, his theory is you're getting an autoimmune inflammation response, which the only area where it makes sense is, like, you look at Japanese people, right?
Yeah.
And cuisine in Japan, even though it's been influenced by American culture and other cultures, is still predominantly Japanese. Mm-hmm. Most of the portion sizing and most of the ingredients and stuff in Japan and China are very traditionally Japanese and Chinese. So, and everybody's thin.
Yeah.
When you look at Asian people that have come to America, emigrated, migrated, whatever, and they start pounding double cheeseburgers and pizzas.
Drinking milk.
They get fucking huge. Yep. So he kind of uses that as an example of, like, the Asian culture is a great example of where keeping a traditional diet is probably optimal for health. The other argument I would make, though, about that is they're also the most active society.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah.
So I don't know that in Japan, if people were eating McDonald's every day, if they'd gain any weight because they're walking 30 miles a day.
Dude, when I went to Japan and Thailand last year, I lost like over 14 days. I lost like 9 pounds.
Because
of
the walking.
Walking everywhere.
Yeah.
And the heat.
Yeah.
You know, and then granted, the food that I ate wasn't like, you know, covered in cheese and all that stuff.
Sure.
So part of it, and then I do have relatives where it's like, they never go on diets. They just eat what we've always eaten: rice,
yeah,
carbs, and all that stuff. But you know,
fish, carbs,
fish, and all that stuff. And they just cook it.
But this doctor's belief is that you're genetically optimized to digest certain foods better than others,
and they're not fat.
Which I couldn't disagree. Which I couldn't agree with more.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
Yeah, they're just normal sized people. They're not like buff superhumans or whatever.
Right.
Or even like, I was reading this one thing. It's like, out of all the Asian men, it's like, why are Korean men a lot more like? Muscular,
yes.
Sometimes,
yeah,
and it's because
every Asian bodybuilder guy you see on the internet is Korean.
Well, but then it's just like their diet consists of a lot of like beef, like Korean beef and barbecue and all that stuff, and so they get a lot of protein in their diet, whereas, you know, maybe like a Chinese or whatever doesn't eat that much, you know. But
food, even organic food, is genetically modifying human makeup,
yeah.
Because it's programming.
Yeah.
It's binary data, whether you believe it or not. The shit you put in your body becomes your genes.
Yeah.
Becomes your physical footprint.
Yeah.
Or your physical thumbprint. Your genealogical thumbprint is based on everything.
Yeah.
Your synaptic response, the things you've seen, traumatic experiences, the food you eat, all of it.
Right.
So when people are like, well, we don't want genetically modified food, it's like everything you eat is genetically modified in your body. Everything you ingest, everything you watch, everything you drink, everything you see. And the thing that amazes me is, like, you're not going to eat a pork chop, but you're going to drink tequila. Fuck off.
Oh, well, alcohol. Like, all the issues go away if it's alcohol. They're like, oh, right. Well, we can drink, though.
Right.
We exactly. can drink.
Yeah, but we can have some beers. So it's sort of one of those things of like, yeah, it's pick your poison.
Yeah.
Pick your poison.
Oh, Michelob Ultralight. Well, we'll have some calories or carbs.
But, you know, like, in all honesty, we could never really determine what the optimal diet is for another 100 years. Mm-mm. We'd have to start today with brand newborn babies and grow them differently for 100 years.
Yeah.
And they'd have to be a sample rate all from the same womb, all from the same parents.
Just a almost test lab.
Yes. You'd have to have a lab of human beings.
Let's do it.
And by the way, the only variance in their human experience would have to be diet. Yeah. They'd have to watch the same television. They'd have to have the same sleeping patterns. Yeah. That's the point about dietary research is that like all of those other things are factors to overall health.
Yeah.
You can't just take five people, feed them three different things and say, this one's more healthy and it's because of the food.
Yeah.
So any of you guys that are listening to this, that watch these fucking fad documentaries and go, I'm going to do that now. Like, we did it. We're guilty of it. We watched the juicing one and we're like, we're going to start juicing.
Oh, yeah.
And I caught
a juicer.
I bought a juicer.
I'm looking at it.
Caught the fucking flu.
Yeah.
And I was the sickest I had ever been because I went on this juice cleanse for like 2 weeks. Yeah. And I looked like I had AIDS.
Yeah.
It was awful. Ned is laughing. Now, do we juice? Fuck yeah, we juice. I'll make juice with the juicer, freeze it into ice cubes, and make smoothies out of it in the morning because it's a way of getting an immediate shot of vitamins with real food.
Right.
It's like concentrated.
Well, I mean, it is. There is a health benefit to it.
Yes, but it's not an all or nothing proposition. Yes.
Yeah, correct.
You know, and I think the best diet is a balanced diet.
Yeah.
No matter what you're getting, and I think, you know, when people talk about like processed foods, are they probably more likely to create an autoimmune response? Absolutely.
Right.
But this world we live in where people are just like, oh, you know, we got to go vegan. The new TV said it. Yeah. It's like, you're dumb.
Well, it's like eggs. Are they good for you or are they bad for you? Because a few years ago, they were terrible for you.
Yes. Well, Ned is laughing because there's a scene in there where he's like, you know, there's a doctor who's like, the salmonella death toll in the United States every year is 2,000 people. Or 21,000, or what was it? I think it was 3,000, right? He's like, that's more than 9/11. That's more than the 9/11 catastrophe. And he's like, now, if you look at salmonella deaths around the world, it's 21,000. That's 7 9/11s. Oh my God. And he's like, if there was a group out there that had done the death toll of 7 9/11s, we'd go get them.
They'd be terrorists.
And I was just like, we'd go get them. Like, are you suggesting that the Army and the National Guard lock and load machine guns and storm the farms of the United States and start waxing cattle? Like, these cows are killing this many people. We got to get them. Like, that was literally a thing that went into this documentary and made it through several cuts and into the final edit. He said...
The agricultural Taliban. Yes. That's a thing, dude.
Yes, the American farmers are Taliban. Worse than the Taliban is basically what this guy was saying. And they left it in there and thought people would take this fucking thing seriously.
Well, someone will listen to it.
Well, a lot of people
someone
are.
Will be like, oh, friends, my God, you're right.
I have a friend who did it and you know, I was like, okay, I hadn't seen it when I talked to him, but I was like, all right, cool. Maybe it's really compelling. And then I watched it and was just like, get the fuck. Is my friend really this stupid? I really felt sad. And that's part of why I think I hate it so much. So, all right, man. Well, we went long on this one.
We did.
About a little over
a lot of food talk.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Didn't talk comedy at all.
Nope.
Next time.
Look, it's good.
Yeah.
I think we talk comedy a little too much sometimes.
Yeah.
We'll come back to it.
All right.
We made this one fun and we talked about food.
It's good.
Yeah. We'll have you back. And now that we have a studio in here.
It's a nice studio.
We can have you back and do it time and time again.
Nice place. Nice speakers. Nice microphones.
All right, buddy.
All right, bud.
Oh, you got anything to plug coming up?
I ain't got shit. I'm going to Thailand again in October. So.
Do you do any shows when you go over there?
I can, but I struggle with just my, you know, the jokes crossing over to there. You know, if it's expat stuff, then I could probably do. Especially, I could probably do like Trump jokes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But no, I'm going over there like my sister's wedding, and then I'm going to go to Vietnam with my mom. She hasn't been back.
Vietnam.
Vietnam. She hasn't, her and my aunt, I'm going there, and like my mom hasn't been back since the war. So oh, wow. It'll be interesting. So.
Yeah.
So we're doing that in October, so I didn't really book anything. And I just came back from Iowa and had great shows.
I like how you said that, like it's in the realm of Vietnam and Thailand. And then I just came back from Iowa.
Well no, I was
which
just
is equally exotic and adventurous.
Well, have you been to Iowa?
Yes, yeah, several times. I wouldn't call it exotic or adventurous.
Yeah, so.
Unless your idea of thrill is seeing how few teeth you can see in a person's face as you have sex with them.
Dude, I went over the real quick. I went over, man, I had some great shows. They were really fun. And then
you were at Penguins, right?
I was. Man. Anyway, yeah, that's the next conversation. Let's talk about.
Yeah, that'll be on our comedy cast. Are we talking about all cast, that stuff?
Yeah. So.
But people can find you at Tony Vin on Twitter.
Yep.
Vinstagram on Instagram.
Tony
right?
Tony Vinstagram, V-I-N-H Instagram.
Yeah.
And then I'm on Facebook, Tony Vin, V-I-N-H.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I will be. I probably plugged my stuff at the beginning of this. This is like Bill and Ted's Time Travel Rules trash can. Remember a trash can. I'll plug my stuff at the beginning of this, but thank you guys for listening. And Tony, thanks for coming
back. All right. Thank you. Hey, big.